All right, we're holding on Chaf Beis Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah that Rav Gamliel had said that there are a few things that you're allowed to do on Yom Tov, which the Chachamim disagreed with. One of them was to put mugmar, which is incense, you put it on coals in order to make a fragrance in the house. So we discussed, the Gemara had discussed what exactly, there might be two purposes you might use mugmar for. One is to make a fragrance in the house. The other one is to perfume clothing. And the Gemara ended up concluding that when it's to perfume clothing, everybody would agree it's usur. The Machlokas is where you're doing it in order to perfume the house. Rav Gamliel allows it because, after all, it's something for human enjoyment. So it's part of Malachas Echol Nefesh, whereas the Chachamim say it has to be Shavah Echol Nefesh. It has to be something that is equally, that's equally enjoyable and usable by everybody, whereas Mugmer is really only for people who are very, very, very finicky or refined, or people who have bad odors or whatever. It's not meant for the average person. Which, by the way, there is a good deal of discussion in Halacha that partly based on that Gemara and partly based on the next piece that we're going to have over here, which continues on this topic of using smoke for fumigating things. There's a good deal of discussion among the Achronim about smoking on Yom Tov, leaving aside the whole question of smoking itself nowadays, they know is not healthy for you. But back before they know that, back before they knew that, or even now, to the extent that people have a craving for it. So there's a good deal of discussion among poskim in the last few hundred years, ever since tobacco was discovered, about whether you're allowed to smoke on Yom Tov or not. On the one hand, you're allowed to use fire on Yom Tov, as we know. On the other hand, smoking cigarettes, there is a certain degree, as the Gemara is going to discuss now in a different context, of putting out fire, because not just when you put out the cigarette, but also because as the tobacco is lighting up, parts of it light up, parts of it go out as you're breathing it. There's also the question again of whether it's considered shovel lechol nefesh, given that not everybody smokes. And there are a number of other issues that different achronim bring up, pro and con it. Lemaisa, the consensus of poskim seems to be that, at least, again, leaving aside all the health issues with it, that from the point of view of the dinim of Yom Tov, in general, it is allowed, but they point out certain gotchas that you have to be careful of in order not to be breaking things of Yom Tov, like, for example, burning words that might be on the wrapper or whatever. Anyway, so the Gemara starts off, three lines from the bottom, Iboilahu ma'ul ashen. Are you allowed on Yom Tov to use smoke to fumigate fruit? Now, you do it. In other words, what you do, first of all, I mean, it could be obviously in order to get rid of bugs and whatever, but in terms of what the Gemara is talking about, Rashi explains, we're talking about that you use perfumes to, you burn them, and the smoke of them, you put the fruit or the produce or whatever in the smoke of them in order that they should absorb that flavor. So it's sort of like when they make smoked meat, and they have that now the meat has a flavor of the wood or whatever kind of wood they use to smoke it. So here it would be the same kind of thing. You'd use spices in order for the fruit to absorb that flavor. So all you're allowed to do that. Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba Amar Rab Osu, Shmuel Amar Mutter. So okay, so Rabbi Yirmi Ba'aba says in the name of Rab that's Osu, Shmuel says it's Mutter. And the Gemara continues, Rav Huna Amar Osu Mepnei Shemechaba. Rav Huna says, now there's two possible reasons you could say that it's usur. One is because it's not shavah lechol nefesh, again, because most people don't care about that thing, so therefore it's only for an istinis, it's only for a person who's particularly delicate or finicky or whatever. And then you could also take the view that there's an ad malacha involved. Well, it's both, really. If it's not shavah lechol nefesh, then we have to be concerned about the malacha involved. So Rav Huna is clarifying for us what the malacha is that's involved. Rav Huna amar osim mepnei shemechaber, because you're putting out the coals. Because when you sprinkle the spice powder on them, then it causes some of the coals to go out. Amar le Rav Nachman v'neima mayim mepnei shemaver. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, why are you focusing on the mechaber? You could just as well focus on the maver. The fact is you're causing the coals to burn brighter. Not the coals so much, but the spices themselves, you're burning them. And the fact that that's also an av malacha, after all. Fine, you're allowed to burn things on Yom Tov, but again, only for oichel nefesh. This is not oichel nefesh because it's not shovel oichel nefesh. It's not something that everybody does. So why don't you mention that? Amalei, instead of Huna tells him it's actually both. First, it causes some of the coals to be extinguished when you pour the spices on them, and then afterwards it causes it to burn. So I'm just mentioning. I mentioned the first thing, the mechaba, but you're right. There is also mavir involved as well. So the Gemara continues. Amar of Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says, based on that, al gabe gachelas oser. So it would be also if you're doing that you're sprinkling the powdered spices on coals for the reason Rav Huna mentioned, because then you're first extinguishing some of the coals and afterwards causing everything to burn more. Al gabe cheres muter. But suppose you take a piece of earthenware which you heat it up, and you're going to now sprinkle the spices on it, and the same thing will happen. The heat of it will cause it to waft throughout the room, and in particular to rise and then to get absorbed into the food. That would be mutter, because now there's no putting out. And it's also, Rashi explains, it's also kila achayad. It's also doing the malacha in an unusual way, so therefore it should be mutter on Yom Tov. Tosfos disagrees with that last point and says that actually Rabbi Yehuda might be taking a view that even though it's havara shalol tzarech, even though it's not a necessity for Yom Tov, again, because not everybody fumigates and perfumes their fruit that way, nevertheless, he would hold that you're allowed to do such havara on Yom Tov where it's not l'tzarech, where it's not strictly for the need of Yom Tov. So now Tosfos goes on to say that actually the halacha, in that case, the halacha would not be like that. The halacha is rather that havara is an av malacha just like any other, and it's only allowed for tzarech Yom Tov, so therefore you have to be careful not to light fires or candles on Yom Tov for no purpose at all. Tosfos mentioned something called a ner shabatala, where you're lighting a candle not for any particular reason, not because you need the light, not because you're doing it in honor of Yom Tov or whatever, but just damn, you're lighting a candle. So then you wouldn't be allowed to do that. And that's brought in Shulchan Aruch. So anyway, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that if you do it on a piece of hot earthenware, then it'll be mutter. On the other hand, Rabba Omar al Gabi Cheres Nami Osir. Rabba says it will in fact also be osir if you do it on top of a piece of earthenware. Mishum to Kamoila Drecha, because then you have a different problem. You have something that didn't have a fragrance in it before is now getting a fragrance. So it's almost like doing a new malacha, Rashi says. So therefore, you do it on the hot earthenware. Yeah, you're not doing mechabe, but you're still causing that now the earthenware absorbs a fragrance that you didn't before. This molad, by the way, is an interesting thing. But posts can talk about what's the basis to not use electricity on Yom Tov. So on Shabbos, you have a variety of different opinions why you actually did have early on. There were opinions that said that electricity is mutter, but those were overruled pretty much. Everybody knows that electricity on Shabbos is also, and there's a few different possibilities why. Among them is that one of them is the malacha of mavir, because closing an electric circuit or opening it often causes sparks. Now, in that case, if it was a matter of mavir, it should be mutter on Yom Tov. We know you're allowed to use fire on Yom Tov. So there's a few other issues that the poskim pointed out with it. One of them is what all Gemara is talking about, moilid, where you're causing something new. You're creating an electric field and an electric potential in the wires that there wasn't there before until you close the circuit, because of course the electricity doesn't flow unless you close the circuit, and that would be another reason, that would be a reason to ask for electricity on Yom Tov as well. With that said, though, now the Alter Rebbe does bring in connection with this Molid Reach that if you have something that has already absorbed a fragrance and now you just want to intensify the fragrance of the same kind, then the Alter Rebbe says it would be mutter. Only to introduce a new fragrance would be usher. Based on that, then, it might be, according to that, now, of course, electricity wasn't known in the Alter Rebbe's times yet, or at least it didn't have practical applications. But nowadays, some poskim say maybe based on that, the Alter Rebbe would allow you to turn up a heating element, like on a stove or something, just not to turn it down. Because what you're doing is you're increasing the electric potential in the wires. You're not creating something new. And in fact, you have certain electric stoves where you have certain electric stoves where nowadays I think it's more common that most of them are this way, where you turn the element up and it goes smoothly up. Like you have, as you turn it more, the electricity goes higher and higher. You don't have where you're turning off one circuit and turning on another. According to the Alter Rebbe, it's possible that those might be mutter. That's obviously something to ask a shaila about. Okay, continuing on the topic, continuing back to the Gemara, Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef to Amitai Rayu, Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef both say in this connection, Sachufi kosa ashiroi b'yoma tova osir, to overturn a cup, where again, you had this cup was full of fragrance, and now you're going to overturn it on top of shiroi, on top of silk garments, b'yoma tova, on Yom Tov, again, with the idea of perfuming the garments, osir. That would be osir, my time, I'm to come by the drecha. Again, because you're creating a fragrance in the silks, in the clothing that you didn't have there before. So the Gemara asks, so why is it any different than, for example, we're going to learn later on in our Masechta, that you're allowed to take if you have a twig from a spicy or fragrant plant, you're allowed to on Yom Tov Merloi Mariachba, you're allowed to roll it between your fingers in order to crush it a little bit so that the fragrance comes out, and then Mariachba, and then you're allowed to smell it. Or similarly with Koitma, you're allowed to cut off, break off a piece of the end of it, or maybe again in order for the fragrance to come out more strongly, or maybe Yachboy, and then you can smell it. So over there on the face of it, isn't that the same as Mother Dereyach? Because before the twig didn't have that much of a fragrance, and now it does. And the answer is that's exactly it. Hosam Recha Miha Issa, because over there the smell taka exists already in the twig, but is Sufi to come Moisif Recha. You're adding to that. To that fragrance, you're making it more intense by crushing or breaking off a piece of the twig, therefore that's mutter. Whereas over here with the cup and the silk garments, you're actually creating a new fragrance in them that they didn't have before, and that we're saying would be also. Okay. Going back now to the question of using perfumes. To perfume the smoke of perfumes of spices to perfume fruit. So we said we had a few different opinions. We had Rav saying it's osir. We had Shmuel saying it's mutter. We had Rav Huna explaining that according to Rav it would be osir because mechaba. We had Rabba saying therefore that it would be osir even if there's no mechaba involved because you're creating a new fragrance. But Rava Omar Agabe Gachelas Nami Mutter. Rava says, never mind doing it on top of cheres, like what Rava says. It would even be mutter to do it on top of the coals, just to put the perfume on the coals, needed to have a bisra agumri, because it's really no different than the case of putting meat on coal to roast, where you're definitely allowed to do that on Yom Tov. You're going to have that. So Rashi explains. Now let's look at the different possibilities. Why we said that it might be also. Is there, as far as oichol nefesh, sure, it's shovel achol nefesh. So meat on coals is shovel achol nefesh. Anybody can enjoy a good roasted piece of meat roasted on the coals. The same way anybody can enjoy fruit that was fumigated with these sweet-smelling perfumes. So therefore, it should be mutter on those grounds, like Shmuel. As far as Rav Huna's point that you're going to be putting out the coals and relighting them, that there's also no also because that's also mutter. It can't be also on those grounds, and we'll talk in a second why. And as far as that you're creating a fragrance, so when you roast meat on coals, you also the meat now has a fragrance of the coals and it's still mutter. So therefore, Rava is saying that therefore to do that with perfumes, to perfume fruit should be mutter. Now to do it to perfume the room, that Rava is going to agree is also because that's not oichel nefesh. That's something else. That's hanas gufoi. And Hanas Gufo, the rules are stricter for that. But for Oichol Nefesh, the rules are much more elastic, and therefore it should be mutter, which is in fact the halacha. Now, what's the difference? We talked about, the Gemara talked about yesterday that, for example, if you have, let's say, a piece of wood that's smoking a lot and it's causing the whole house to get smoky, you're not allowed to take it out of there or to put it out. You're not allowed to put it out. You would have to take it out of there if you have a problem with it. And here on the other, so we know that in general, extinguishing is also on Yom Tov, whereas here we're allowing it. So one of the explanations, the chinuch gives an explanation, there's two different kinds of things where you're doing kibui. One is where you're doing it because you don't want the thing anymore. For example, you have a piece of wood that's burning and you don't want it to be burning anymore, so you're going to put it out. That would be also on Yom Tov, unless it's for Echol Nefesh. On the other hand, here we're talking about that the extinguishing is part of the process of making something, namely where you're making food, you're roasting meat on the coals, and the juices are dripping onto them. That kind of kibui, which is part of melechas echol nefesh, would be mutter. Also, other meforshim point out it's not necessarily that with dripping on the coals is going to put anything out. So it's not psik resha. If it was psik resha, maybe it would be different, but it's not. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Dorash Rav Gvir mi Beit Kosel apischa de Bei Resh Kolosa. Rav Gvir from Beit Kosel, which is the name of a place, he darshan as follows in front of the doorway of the Resh Kolosa. So the Resh Kolosa we've had before was the governor of the Jews in Babel. So he had a big mansion, of course, and people, I guess, used to gather there all the time. So one time in front of his door, Rav Gvir mi Beit Kosel gave the following darsha. Ketura Shori. He darshan that keturah is allowed. Now, he used the word keturah. He didn't clarify what he meant by that. Omale Amema, so Amema asked him, my keturah, what do you mean by this word keturah? What exactly are you saying is mutter on Yom Tov? E keturah bidi. Do you mean that the keturah that you do on the wrists and sleeves of garments? So Rashi explains that it means pleats. You make pleats in the sleeve or in the wrist of the garment. So you're telling so keturah would be then meloshin keturah then would be meloshin tying, because like you tie it together sort of. You make the garment into pleats that'll stay that way. BD would be by the hands. There's elsewhere in Moed Katan, there's a Tosfos has a girsa, not BD but Biri, which where biri are garters that are used to hold up your socks. So the idea would be the same thing, to make pleats in garters. Anyway, so if you're talking about that kind of pleating and you're saying that that's mutter on Yom Tov, how could that be? Of course it's not mutter, maisa omanhu. It's a professionally done thing to make pleats like that, and therefore it should be also. The ila ashen, if you're talking about keturah, meloshen smoke, which is keturah, that's the thing. The word keturah can be related to an Aramaic word kotar, which means tie, or to another Aramaic kutra, which means smoke. So that's he's asking him, do you mean to make pleats? Then of course that's also. And if you're talking about to smoke fruit, like we said before, also to come over the dreicha. Then again, it should be also, like we said before, like Rav and Rabba said, because you're creating a new fragrance. So what kind of kutra are you, Rav Gvir, saying is mutter? Omer Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi explained to Amemar, Ano Amrita Nihale, I'm the one who told Rav Gvir Mibei Kosel that this keturah is mutter, or Meshmei de Gabra Rabra Amrita, and I told it to him in the name of a great person, in the name of a great Talmud Chacham, or the different Girsa, I told it to him in the name of Rava. La'olam la'ashin, we are talking about that the keturah that he's talking about that's mutter does mean to smoke fruit. Umidi de Haba Abisa Agumi, and again, again, the reason is why it's mutter is because, like Robert said, it's the same thing as putting meat on coals, where even though you have where it is for oichol nefesh, and we do consider it shovel oichol nefesh, and we're not worried about the possible kibui that there might take place doing that, and we're not worried about the molad reyach either, or because it's melechas oichol nefesh, and therefore that's what Rav Gvir is basing himself on to say that keturah is mutter, and by keturah he means to smoke fruit, not to make pleats. To make pleats, he says, I would definitely be also. We said in the Mishnah that a third thing you're not allowed, the third thing that Rav Gamliel said you're allowed to do, which the Chachamim disagreed, is v'osim gdi makulas. Rav Gamliel said you're allowed to eat, you're allowed to roast and eat a gdi makulas on Pesach night. This is after the Churban. Rav Gamliel was nasi after the Churban, but you're taking a gdi, a young goat or a young sheep, and you're roasting it in a style similar to the Churban Pesach. In particular, Rashi on the Mishnah explains the word makulas means with a helmet. The word makulas comes from an Aramaic word for helmet, because they'd take the intestines and the legs of the animal. They'd roast them separately. They'd put them on the spit separately from the rest of the body of the animal. So therefore, it resembled a warrior with his helmet and his other gear near him. So Rav Gamliel allowed you to do that on Pesach night, as a Zeich of a Mikdash, and the Chachamim asked it because just the opposite. It looks like you're eating Kodshim outside the Beis Mikdash. So the Gemara says in this connection, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rav Yossi Omer, Todes Ish Roimi, Hinig Todes, a man of Roimi, so he was a distinguished person in the city of Rome. The Gemara in Psachim discusses, is it that he was a Talmid Chacham, or is it that he was a rich person who was a big Baal Tzedakah? The Gemara brings there both possibilities. Anyway, Hinig Es Bnei Roimi, Lecho Gdima Kulos B'Lei L'Psachim. He created a minhag there in Rome that they should eat a gdima kulos on Pesach night. It's not so clear from the Gemara here whether this Todes lived in the time of the Beis Mikdash. We're talking Jews who, for whatever reason, couldn't make Aliyah L'Regel, so he was telling them to do that, or whether he lived after the Churban and he's telling them to do it as a Zecher. Whatever the case, Sholchulei, the Chachamim sent him a message, Ilmole Todes after, if not for the fact that you were Todes. So here, Rashi follows the first explanation in Psachim over there that he was a distinguished Talmid Chacham. The Gemara brings another possibility over there that he was a big Baal Tzedakah. Anyway, if you weren't Todes, such an important person, Gozranu Alecha Nidui, we would declare Nidui on you. We would put you in Cheirem. Shata Machalos, because you're a Kodshim Machutz, because you're causing Jewish people to eat Kodshim outside the Beis Mikdash. What do you mean? Kodshim is talking about it? What do you mean? They're not eating Kodshim. They were never makdish these animals or anything. Ela'ema ke'ein Kodshim. No, but what they meant is that you're making the Jewish people eat something similar to Kodshim, and then they're going to think, people who see them eating that are going to think that they designated them as a Korban Pesach, and they're going to think you're allowed to shech them eat a Korban Pesach outside Yerushalayim, which of course would be Chayiv Kodesh. So therefore they told them to stop doing that. So now in the Mishnah, we're saying that Rav Gamliel held like Todes that you're allowed to do that, and the Chachamim disagreed. Since we're mentioning things that Rav Gamliel allowed on Yom Tov, which the Chachamim disagreed, so the Gemara mentioned something else. The Gemara mentioned something similar with another Tana where there were certain things that he said are mutter and the other Chachamim said are also. So the Mishnah says, Shloisha Dvarim, Rav Elazar ben Azariah Matir, V'Chachamim Oistrim. There were three things that Rav Elazar ben Azariah said are mutter, and the Chachamim said are also. Number one, not all of them have to do with Yom Tov, but we're mentioning them again because it's similar to the Mishnah about Rav Gamliel. Parosa Yotza Beretzua Sheben Karneah. Number one, his cow would go out on Shabbos with a strap or a ribbon between its horns. Now, so we learned in Masech the Shabbos that such a ribbon is not used in order to keep the animal from running away or something. It's not like you have a halter tied there. It's strictly there for decoration. And therefore, the Chacham said it's also because it's considered a masri. It's considered something that the animal is carrying. It's not even considered a tachshik for the animal because it's not the kind of thing that animals usually wear for decoration. But Rav Elazar ben Azariah disagreed. Number two, umakardinas habehema biyamtiv. Number two, Rav Elazar ben Azariah said, you're allowed to comb an animal on Yom Tov. Now, we're going to have in the Mishnah, there's two different kinds. We're going to talk about makardin and makardzefin. Makardin involves a metal, we're going to see soon. Makardin involves a comb with small teeth. Rashi explains it means a metal comb. So as opposed to, we're going to have soon, makardzefin, which is using a comb with larger teeth, Rashi says it's made out of wood. So the point is, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, you're allowed to use even the one with the smaller teeth, even though it's possible that you may scratch the animal and cause a wound on it while you're combing it, you'd still be allowed to. Says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And the Chachamim disagree, as we'll see. Number three, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah held the Sheikh Gneseret Esther Pilplin Berechaim Shalahen. Number three, he said you're allowed to grind up pepper in a pepper mill. Now we learned previously in the first Perek that you're allowed to grind spices on Yom Tov because one of those things, if you don't grind them, if you grind them the day before, they're going to lose some of their flavor. But the Chachamim would say you're allowed to grind them like with a mortar and pestle. You put them in the mortar and you bang on them with the pestle. That would be mutter, but not to use the regular pepper. Not to use the regular pepper mill that you use for them. Whereas Rav Elazar ben Azariah allows it because for one thing, it's small and it's not a normal way. So he would say it's not a normal way of grinding on Yom Tov. Therefore, it should be mutter. Going back to the second one, where Rav Elazar ben Azariah had said that you're allowed to do makardin, that you're allowed to comb the animal using a comb with small teeth. Rabbi Yehuda, ein makardin es habehema b'yom tov b'pnei she'osech habura. So Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with Rav Elazar ben Azariah. He says you can't do makardin with a comb with small teeth. because it's going to cause a wound on the animal. It has small, sharp teeth, so therefore it's going to end up scratching the animal and causing it to, and then causing a wound, which is also on Yom Tov. But Rabbi Yehuda says you are allowed to do makaritzafim, which is you use a wooden comb, which has larger teeth, and that's much less likely to scratch the animal. The Chum said you can't do. The Chum say you can't do either one for reasons that we're going to discuss in the Gemara. Okay. So on the first one, we said Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's cow would go out on Shabbos with a strap between its horns, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah allowed it. So the Gemara asks, which we had the same thing on Shabbos. Remember that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah chod a parah habyolei. You're telling me Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah only had one cow that you're saying his cow? Tlaser Alfi Egli, 13,000 calves have him asked. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Me'edre, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would take off as Meiser from his herd, Kol Shata Veshata, every year. So here it says Tlaser, which is 13,000. In other places where the Gemara brings this, it says Tresar, which is 12,000. Whatever the case, the point is, if he's taking Meiser from his calves every year, 12 or 13,000, means that 120,000 or 130,000 calves were born in his herd every year because he was extremely rich. So why are we saying his cow as if he only had the one cow? Tosfos, by the way, talks about a side issue. What do we mean that he took Meiser from them? Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, we know, became Nasi at 18. So Tosfos makes the calculation. We don't know the exact years, but at least we can approximate. You had a period of time when Rabbi Gamliel was Nasi before they appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Gamliel became Nasi only sometime after the Churban, because shortly after the Churban, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai was still alive, and he made a bunch of takanos that we learned some about them in Sukkah. We're going to learn more. We learned about some of them in Sukkah. We're going to learn about all of them, Be'ez Hashem, and Masechta Rosh Hashanah, which is next. Anyway, so Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai definitely lived a couple of years after the Churban. Only then did Rabbi Gamliel become the full Nasi. Maybe up until that point, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai was kind of acting Nasi, but still, the fact is, Rabbi Gamliel didn't become full Nasi until several years after the Churban, it comes out. Then you had Rabbi Gamliel was Nasi for several years, and only then did they depose him, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah became Nasi for a period of time. Meanwhile, and at that point he was 18. Meanwhile, one of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai's takanos, or one of the, it doesn't say Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai specifically, I don't think, but one of the takanos after the Churban was that we don't do Maisa Behema anymore because there's going to be takala. You're gonna have a big problem. You're gonna end up forgetting that these animals are Maisa, and you're gonna end up using them, and then you're gonna be doing Me'ilah with Kodshim. So Tosfos over here and in some other places discusses a few possibilities. One is that maybe the takana to stop doing Maisa Behema took place only several years after the Churban. So meanwhile, there were a couple of years in between when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had a chance to do Maisa Sheni before they revatel it. Another possibility is that it doesn't mean Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah himself, it means his guardian. In other words, his father passed away when he was young. He had a guardian who was taking care of the estate for him, and he would take this Meiser before the Churban. And a third possibility is Meiser over here doesn't mean Meiser that's brought as a Churban. And that brought as a Churban, it means rather Meiser that he had to pay his taxes to the king. So those are three possibilities Tosfos brings up. And then there are other Rishonim bring up another possibility as well. Maybe even though the din of Meiser Sheni no longer applied, still Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah on his own voluntarily took Meiser from his cattle or his sheep and whatever and gave them to Kohanim. Whatever the case, the point is that he was extremely rich. He had lots and lots of cattle, certainly more than one cow. So why are we saying his cow as though it was the only one? The answer is Tana. We learn in a Braisa. Loi shaloi hoisa ela shal shchedtei hoisa. It actually wasn't his cow. It belonged to his neighbor. Or mitoch shalei michaba. But because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah did not protest her doing that, which the Chachamim are saying, that's also on Shabbos, Nikris al Shmo, then it's called on his name. The Mishnah makes it sound as though it was his own cow because of the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, if a person has the ability to protest somebody else doing an Aveira and he doesn't, then he's blamed for it. So over here, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is blamed for it. In fact, the Rishonim bring over here something that the Yerushalmi says on this. The Yerushalmi says that the Chachamim told Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you either get this taken care of or we're going to expel you from our group, from the Chacham, from the group of the Chachamim in the Yeshiva. So I guess he went and took care of it, but also he realized how serious it was, that just because he holds its mutter doesn't mean it really is. The fact is, he should have been machmir like the Chachamim. And therefore, the Yerushalmi says he fasted so much about that that his teeth ended up turning black. The Alter Rebbe brings this in Igeres HaTshuva as one of a few examples where we find where Chachamim fasted a huge number of fasts for something that in principle shouldn't even require. All it requires is basic tshuva, but these Chachamim wanted to do, like when you bring a korban ola, to that Hashem should, that you should be just on good terms, so to speak, with Hashem as before. So the same way Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and other Chachamim in similar situations did this in order that Hashem should be willing to accept them as beautifully as before, and not hold any vestige of the Aveira against them. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, we said that Rav Elazar ben Azariah says you're allowed to do kirud of an animal on Yom Tov, which we said meant with a comb with small teeth. And then we said that Rabbi Yehuda had brought in the possibility of makartafin, where instead of using a comb with small teeth, you use one with large teeth. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Ezehu kirud ve Ezehu kirud. So what is the definition of these two things? Kirud ktanim v'osim chabura. Kirud involves that the comb has small teeth, and therefore it causes a wound on the animal, or it's very likely to. Kirtzuf b'dolim v'osim chabura. Kirtzuf means that it's larger teeth, and therefore it's less likely to cause a wound. The Rambam it's interesting, the Gemara over here doesn't say anything about the size of the teeth. It just says big or small, and Rashi explains it means the size of the teeth. The Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos has a different explanation of it. He says that we're not talking about the size of the teeth, we're talking about the size of the insects that attach themselves to the animal. So ktanim would be small creatures like ticks or something, where there, when you remove them, they're much more likely to cause some bleeding on the animal because they're very tightly attached. As opposed to kirtzuf would be removing the larger flies and bugs and whatever that attach themselves to the animal, where there you're not likely to make a wound when you remove them because they're not so tightly attached. So according to the Rambam, it's not the size of the teeth of the comb, it's the size of the insect that you're removing from the animal with the combing. Anyway, so the Gemara continues, the gimel machloikas bedavar. So there's actually a three-way machloikas about this. Rabbi Yehuda saba dava sheni meskaven osir. Rabbi Yehuda holds that when you're doing a malacha, even if you didn't intend to do that malacha, it's still osir, as we had many times in Shabbos when he holds that way. Mihu, however, Rabbi Yehuda says, kirud tanim v'osim chabura. However, given that kirud involves small ones, small teeth according to Rashi, or small insects according to the Rambam, v'osim chabura, and you're very likely to make a wound, to very likely to cause the animal to bleed when you do that. Therefore, it wouldn't be allowed. Kirtzuf, the main is in chabura, whereas kirtzuf involves large ones, large teeth, or large insects, and therefore you're not likely to make a chabura. V'loy gazrin and kirtzuf otu kirud, we're not going to make a gzera. Don't do kirtzuf because you might come to do kirud instead. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't worry about that. Therefore, he says kirud is also kirtzuf is mutter. Rabbanan sabri nami kirabi Yehuda, dava sheni miskaven osir. The Chachamim, meanwhile, agree with Rabbi Yehuda about the part of dava sheni miskaven being osir, but they add, because we're in kirtzuf, otu kirud, but they add, you can't do kirtzuf on Yom Tov because you might come to do kirud, and kirud would cause the animal to bleed, and that would be dava sheni miskaven and would be osir. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, sava like Rabbi Shimon, dava sheni miskaven mutter. Meanwhile, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds like Rabbi Shimon, that it doesn't matter. Dava sheni miskaven is mutter. You're not intending to cause the animal a wound. You're not intending to cause it to bleed. Therefore, even if you do, as long as it's not psik resha, it's fine. Therefore, ben kirud or ben kirud or ben kirtzuf shari. Therefore, either one is mutter. Now, with that said, though, Tosfos says the fact is when you use a comb, the Tosfos describes the combs that they had in their times, which were made out of metal. Now, fine, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, there's no problem of using a metal comb because you're not necessarily going to cause a wound. However, Tosfos points out there is a different point with it, that the metal combs that they used in Tosfos' times almost pretty much inevitably pull out hair. Therefore, that's a psik resha of a different kind. You're doing a malacha of gozes, removing hair from the animal, and therefore, for that reason, you wouldn't be able to use that one. So you'd have to use the kind of comb where I guess the kind of metal comb they had in the times of the Gemara, maybe the teeth were spaced further apart so that it wasn't going to tear out hair. And it's not necessarily going to wound the animal either. And even if it does, it's not a psik resha, and it's davar shein miskaven, so therefore it would be mutter. So the Gemara says, Omar Rava, Omar of Nachman, Omar Shmuel. The Amila Omar of Nachman Chudei. Another version is that Rav Nachman said on his own, not in the first version is that he said in the name of Shmuel. The second version is that Rav Nachman says it on his own. Halacha could Rav Shimon. The halacha is like Rav Shimon. Dava Shenim is Skaven as Mutter. For example, we learned in Masechta Shabbos that you're allowed to drag a bent, that you're allowed to drag a light bench or something on the ground and on the dirt, and we're not worried that it's going to dig up dirt because it's not inevitable that it will. So the halacha is like Rav Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah murder, like, because we see that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah agrees with him and says in our Mishnah that combing an animal is mutter.
Amalei Rav Elazar ben Azariah. He's still on the road. The Chachamim said it's not mutter. How come the halacha is like this?
So Rava asked Rav Nachman, what do you mean the halacha should be like Rav Shimon because Rav Elazar ben Azariah agreed with him? Just the opposite. Exactly your question. You should say the other way around. The halacha is like the Chachamim. The halacha is like Rav Yehuda because the Chachamim in our Mishnah, who are the Rav, agree with him. So Rav Nachman says, that's not what I meant. What I meant was, Anok Rav Shimon Svirali. I hold like Rav Shimon independently. Bechlal, I hold the halacha as like Rav Shimon in this matter of davar shenim miskaven. And I have another reason besides the fact that I find Rav Shimon's svara more compelling, and therefore that I say the halacha should be like him. Besides that, you see that he's not a das yachid. You see that he has Rav Elazar ben Azariah on his side as well. And in fact, we do paskin like that. We do paskin like Rav Shimon that davar shenim miskaven is mutter. So the fact that Rav Elazar ben Azariah agrees with him, and this is a side thing, the real reason is because Rav Nachman held that that's how it should be, and that's how it is.
Even though the Chachamim said it's not like that.
Even though the Chachamim disagreed and said like Rabbi Yehuda, nevertheless, Rav Nachman is entitled to pick a side and say like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So yeah, this is one of the rare cases where the halacha is like a yachid. But again, it's not really so much. It's really because the initial machloikas is really between Rabbi Yehuda, the general machloikas of Davar Shenim Miskaven is between two yechidim, Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Shimon. So Rav Nachman is entitled to pick Rav Shimon over Rabbi Yehuda. And then, by the way, in our Mishnah, it comes out that you're going according to a das yachid because you're going according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. But that's not the primary reason why Rav Nachman passed in that way.
The primary reason is you say there's two yachidim here, but they were also chachamim before who were outnumbering Rabbi Yehuda.
Not necessarily. The fact, first of all, I mean, it's true. Chronologically, actually, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and the chachamim come before Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. It's true. Nevertheless, though, the fact is, the famous machloikas of Davar Shenim Miskaven, Mutter or Osir, is between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and both of them are Yechidim. We don't specifically find what in their generation, what the other Chachamim held one way or the other. So it could even be, I mean, we could even say then, fine, in Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's times, maybe the Chachamim who held that it's also were the majority, but by the time Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon came along, then it wasn't necessarily that way. The fact is, a later Beis Din is able, that Rambam describes, for example, that if the Chachamim in one generation come up with a din, let's say, based on the Yud Gimel Midas Shatorin Adreshes Behem, not a Gzeder or Takona or something, then a later group of Chachamim are entitled to disagree with them. So maybe you could have something like this over here. In Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's time, the Chachamim who held differently were the majority. By the time of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, they weren't necessarily. All we hear about is Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon arguing on this. We don't really hear about the opinions of the other Chachamim. And therefore, Rabbi Nachman can well paskin like Rabbi Shimon because he's only a Yachid, fine, but Rabbi Yehuda is also only a Yachid. Okay. Anyway. Since we mentioned the pepper grinder that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said you're allowed to grind pepper with it on Shabbos, and the Chachamim disagree, so by the way, the Mishnah digresses to tell us a little bit about this pepper mill. Now, the pepper mills, at least the kind they had in those days, were made out of three parts. Nowadays, also, sometimes you go to a fancy restaurant, they'll grind pepper right in front of you. I don't know whether the pepper mills that they have nowadays are constructed similarly to the ones that they had in the time of the Gemara that we're going to describe here. But anyway, the kind that we're describing here is as follows. You have on top, you have grinding wheels, which actually grind up the peppercorns. So those wheels are made out of wood and plated with metal so that they can grind effectively. Then underneath them, you have a sieve through which the ground pepper falls, And then you have at the bottom is a wooden keli that the ground pepper falls into. So the Mishnah says, "Harichayim shel pipulin tmei mishum shloisha kelim." It's tomei as three different kelim, which means, in other words, Rashi says, so even if, let's say, one part breaks off, the other two are still able to be makabel tumah. Tosfos says another point of it is also that even if the other way around, also even if they're all connected together and one of them becomes tomei, the other two do not. So let's say, for example, you had a dead sheretz touch the top part, then according to Tosfos is saying only the top part would become tamei and not the bottom two parts. And according to Rashi, it's also, even if the top part broke off, the middle and the bottom part are still able to be mekabel tumah. Anyway, mishum kli kibul, on the bottom you have the container, the wooden container into which the pepper, into which the ground pepper falls. You also have, there's a metal keli involved, namely the grinding wheels, and then you also have, there's a sieve, which is also makabel tumah. Why is a sieve makabel tumah? So we'll explain. So let's learn the two lines of Gemara, and then we'll explain. Tana, so we learn in a braisa, the bottom part of the pepper grinder is makabel tumah as a kli kibul. It's made out of wood. And had it been flat, it wouldn't be makabel tumah. But because it has a receptacle, the usual rule is that wooden kelim that have a receptacle are makabel tumah. Emtsois mishum kli kvara, the middle one, which is the sieve, is makabel tumah as a kli kvara. Now Rashi describes that part is not made out of a metal mesh. If it was made out of a metal mesh, then of course it would be tumah anyway. All metal kelim are makabel tumah. Rashi explains it's made out of a wooden mesh. Nevertheless, says Rashi, even as a wooden mesh, it's makabel tumah, Rashi says, because it's very similar. A mesh is made in a very similar way to a woven cloth. Therefore, Rashi says the Chachamim said that it's makabel tumah midrabanan. Tosfos disagrees with that. Come on, I mean, a wooden mesh is nothing at all like something woven. Rather, Tosfos says that what it is the reason why the mesh is makabel tumah is because when you grind in the pepper, the finer flakes of pepper fall through, but you have the outer coating, the outer covering of the peppercorn or other things like that, other things that might be mixed in there that are held back by the mesh, and therefore that's reason for that to be makabel tumah, because it is a kli kibul, it's a wooden keli that does in fact have a receptacle because it holds things inside it. And then El Yonah Mishum Klei Matris, the top part of the pepper grinder is makabel tumah as a metal keli, because again, you have wooden wheels over there that are plated with metal. Now, usually we would say the metal is bottled to the wood, but here it's the other way around. The metal is the main active part of it. The metal is what actually grinds the pepper. The wood is only there in order to support it from behind. Therefore, the whole thing, therefore that part with the wheels is makabel tumah. Since we're talking about things, about dinim of things that are makabel tumah, so let's talk about another one. The Mishnah says, agola shel katan, the agola of a child. Rashi explains we're talking about a stroller. Now we're going to say that it's tumim, so we're going to say that it's tumim midras. So let's learn the Mishnah and then we'll talk about what Tosfos says on it. So Rashi says, agola shel katan means a baby's stroller. Tmeya midras, it's makabel tumas midras, meaning if the baby himself is a zov, then stroller is tomei midras, because it's a normal thing for the baby to sit on it and then just to sit on it. So and Rashi explains, we know the general rule of tumas midras is that if the primary purpose or major purpose of something is not to sit or lean or whatever or lie on it, then it's not makabel tumas midras, because they tell him I'm moed benasim lachteinu, get up, we want to use it for our work. But a baby's stroller is not like that. It's made for the baby to sit or to lie in. Therefore, if the baby is a zov, then the stroller is tomei. Now Tosfos disagrees with that. Tosfos says, if we're talking about a stroller, of course it's makabel tumas midras. Obviously, it's made for the baby to sit in. So rather, Tosfos says, we're talking about baby walker. Now, nowadays, you don't see them much anymore because sometimes a baby falls over in them and get hurt. So people use them less. But in the old days, they had these baby walkers, like kind of a frame that surrounds the baby and then holds on to it and then learns to walk around. So it's not the baby doesn't lie on it or sit on it or whatever, but on the other hand, he does sometimes rest his weight on it, and that's reason enough, Tosfos says, for it to be makabel tumas midras.
Is it shkiach for a child to be a zav?
Not shkiach, but it could happen. I mean, in principle, a baby, even a baby on the day he's born, could become a zav. And similarly, that's for a boy. A girl on the girl could be as little as 10 days old and become a zava. Besides which, also the chachamim made a gzera that all goyim are considered zavim midrabanan. So therefore, we could be talking about, let's say, you have a stroller or a baby walker that was used by a goyish kid. So now we're saying that would be tummy midras.
Oh, so if the guy, if the Yiddish kid would play with it, then they would become kabel tumah.
Then they'd be tummy, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number two, the Mishnah says when you tell us for Shabbos, you are allowed to move the stroller or the walker on Shabbos because it is a keli after all. So therefore, in other words, that's a keli. So therefore, it's not mukta. Number three, the ainin nigreres ella agabe kelim. When you're dragging it around, when you want to use it to walk the child around on Shabbos, you can only do it on top of cloths. Because otherwise, what's going to happen is it's going to dig. You had that dirt floors in those days and dirt streets, and therefore you're going to end up making a groove in the ground, and therefore you're doing the malacha of chodesh, of plowing the ground. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says no. I agree you're not allowed to drag any other kalim, especially Rabbi Huda is the one who holds, as we said before, Dava Sheni Miskaven also. So even you're not intending to dig up the ground, then it would be also to do that. Chutzmin ha'agola, he says, with the exception of a stroller or this walker, Mipneshi Keveshes, because it doesn't dig up the dirt, it presses it down. When you have where the stroller went or where the baby walker went, the baby walker, the pastures, I guess, is on wheels also. So where it went, you know, when you see a groove in the ground, it's not that the dirt was moved aside, which is what happens when you're dragging things. The dirt was being pressed down by the wheels. Therefore, that shouldn't be usur on Shabbos, says Rabbi Huda. So the Gemara says, "Agola shall cut in tamei medras." Now, why are we saying that this baby stroller or walker is tamei medras? Because the child rests his weight on it. So according to Rashi, he rests his full weight on it because it's a stroller. According to Tosfos, he's not necessarily resting his full weight on it because much of his weight is on his feet because he's learning to walk. But still, he leans on it with his arms, with his hands and his arms, and therefore that's enough for it to be makabel tumas midras. We said when he tell us for Shabbos, we said that you can move it on Shabbos, and the reason is because, like we said, Mishum Beikah Torah's Kli Allah, because it has the form and the function of a keli, so therefore it can't be mukta. You wouldn't say it's like dirt or rocks or whatever that are mukta. And when he said ve'ein negreres agabe kelim, ela agabe kelim, we said the third thing that Tana Kama had said was that you can only drag it on Shabbos on clothes, implying on pieces of cloth, al gabe kelim and al gabe kalkaloi, implying but not on the bare ground. Now, my timer, why not to call it choretz? The reason is because you're making a groove in the ground. So, the Gemara says, mani, the problem with that is, who would that be like? Rabbi Yehuda. Apparently, that would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. Dama dava sheni miskaven oser. Whereas we just said, Rabbi Yehuda says, even though you're not intending to dig up the ground, nevertheless, that's what you're doing, and that's reason enough to answer it. So, after all, according to Reb Shimon, we would say there should be no problem with moving the stroller on dirt anyway, even if it did actually dig up the dirt, because Reb Shimon says Dava Shem Meskaven is Mutter. The Tnan or the Tanya, really, it's a Braisa. Reb Shimon I'm a Gur or the Mita Kis of a Safsel. Reb Shimon says a person is allowed on Shabbos or on Yom Tov to drag a bed or chair or bench over Vajli Skaven Lasas Chodetz, as long as he's not intending to make a groove in the ground. So it sounds like, therefore, our Mishnah has to be according to Rabbi Yehuda, Ema Sefer, but then we have in the Sefer, Rabbi Yehuda, Ema Eina Kol Negron M'Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda says you can't drag anything on Shabbos, Chutz Min Agola, except for a wagon, except for a stroller, Mepneshi Keveshes, because it presses down the dirt, implying Mepneshi Keveshes Eina V'Choretz Loi. So you're saying that because the reason why Rabbi Yehuda is saying it's mutter, because it's only pressing down the dirt, it's not actually moving any dirt from its place. So what is it? Is our Mishnah like Rabbi Yehuda or not? Who else would it be like? It can't be like Rabbi Shimon, because according to him, there should be no problem with the stroller. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, what we see Rabbi Yehuda is disagreeing with the Tana Kama. So who is the Tana Kama? The answer is Trei Tanoi Valibid Rabbi Yehuda. There are two Tanoim within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion who disagree within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Namely, you have the Tanakama holds, both of them hold like Rabbi Yehuda that Dava Sheni Miskaven also. But the Tanakama says Therefore, you shouldn't be allowed to use a stroller or a baby walker on Shabbos on a dirt floor, because what happens? Sometimes a wheel gets stuck and then it ends up digging. So therefore, you should assert on those grounds. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda, when we continue in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, that means a second Tana, according to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, who says that's not very common, that a wheel should get stuck. Therefore, you don't have a problem when the wheels turn. They just press down the dirt. Therefore, there should be no problem. We're not going to be worried about one wheel getting stuck and digging up the dirt. There's no reason to make a gzeira for that. The halacha, anyway, is like Reb Shimon, Dover Shani Miskaven is Mutter. So even if you do have a wheel of the stroller or the walker stuck, you would be allowed to use it on Shabbos or Yom Tov on dirt, as long as you're not intending to dig up the dirt, and as long as it's not so heavy that inevitably it's going to dig up the dirt, because that would be Psik Resha. Hadron Halacha Yom Tov.
Yeshkoyev.
Everyone.